From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
As we head into the new year, we have a great program for you today. We'll chat with Dr. Robert Shaner, Chief Workforce Development Officer for Lyft Corporation, the National Advanced Materials and Manufacturing Innovation Institute. And also, we'll dive into the world of artificial intelligence with Dr. Alina Zachary Ross from Ypsilanti Schools. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Dr. Robert Shaner, former superintendent of Rochester Community Schools and now working for Lyft, which is a manufacturing innovation institute sponsored by the Department of Defense. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Thank you, Doctor.
So I think a great place to start is help our School Talks listeners understand really what Lyft is and sort of its overall mission.
Sure. Lyft is one of eight Department of Defense Manufacturing Innovation Institutes. They were stood up about 11 years ago. We're actually located right here in Corktown. The main mission of Manufacturing Innovation Institutes is to make sure that we have the defense industrial base to support our warfighters in case of need. So at Lyft, our job is advanced materials, advanced manufacturing processes, and the workforce that goes along with that.
Mm-hmm. And in your role as Chief Workforce Development Officer, what kinds of operations do you oversee?
So Lyft is a kind of a unique innovation institute. At our headquarters here in Corktown, we not only have 100,000 square feet active research and engineering facility that's doing everything from materials that might have to do with armor or things that fly really high, really fast, get really hot and really cold, but we also have a learning lab that replicates what's going down on the shop floor. So we have field trips and outreach activities going on in Corktown, but I also have a similar facility in Caguas, Puerto Rico that I have the privilege of leading. And then we have projects all over the country. We have our Operation Next program in Butte, Montana. We have Operation Next in Florida. And I'm currently working with a team of people to modernize the workforce at the Iowa Army Ammunition Facility in Burlington, Iowa.
So it goes without saying, how do you, in your role, balance all this multidisciplinary stuff while sort of, I would imagine, managing training and sort of the commercialization of research and development? How does all that fit together for you, given the regions that you oversee?
Yeah, I think I bring a unique perspective to it, because when it comes to workforce development, oftentimes we don't have the K-12 school perspective, but the integration perspective out of how we integrate young people getting exposed to advanced manufacturing skilled trades and STEM careers, and how that integrates with the higher ed system. So I think I help with that. I got a crash course as I came to Lyft, and I have experience in the Department of Defense, but certainly not government contracting. So I also not only prepare proposals for the federal government and other philanthropic organizations, but we also have the responsibility of managing all of that.
One of the things we try to do on School Talks is help our listeners understand all of the different kinds of opportunities available for students as they leave high school, mm-hmm. or in many cases, young adults looking to change careers.
Right.
For example, at times we'll interview different unions who offer apprenticeships and mm-hmm. so on, whether they're coming out of high school or choosing to change careers. And through the educational institution lens, I'm curious what strategies you've found to be most effective in building those kinds of connections to educational groups.
Yeah, the thing that I think I brought to Lyft and I bring to the work that I do at Lyft, I like to say about Lyft is we have Detroit roots and national impact. But my dad was a toolmaker right over here on Paquette for almost 50 years for General Motors. And he was an extremely talented man, master craftsman. But I think my dad always saw his work in a factory as a sentence to a fate, not a destiny, not a pathway to a destiny. So to me, the way we approach this is to make sure that we give young people exposure and inspiration to things like advanced manufacturing, to STEM careers, and we let them make a choice and choose a pathway. Because hey, someone might start out as a welder in our Operation Next program, and they might not be an entrepreneur and owning the shop. We have a, you know, several examples of young people that started out as welders and ended up as getting degrees at Michigan Tech or other universities as metallurgists. So I think we have to give a broad base. I think exposure at our facility in Corktown and in Caguas is really important, particularly given the focus on college admissions with our K-12 system. We really have to make a specific effort to expose young people to advanced manufacturing skilled trades, and STEM careers.
You mentioned the welder and the NEXT program. Can you expand a little bit on what NEXT is and how that creates an opportunity?
Yeah, Operation NEXT was a really unique program. It got piloted with a federal grant in 2019, right before the pandemic. And it was initially intended to help transitioning military personnel find a skilled trade as they transitioned out of the military. And it kind of bridged the gap between the K-12 system and apprenticeship programs, because it's a rapid credentialing program. It's not for credit. It's not an apprenticeship program. It's a down and dirty training program to get someone a nationally portable certification so they can get employed wherever they go. If they want to go to their home or record, they can go home and get a job in welding, CNC, robotics, or industrial technology maintenance. Since that time, we've trained over 1,000 military personnel. Unfortunately, that federal grant ran out. But we are training folks under Operation NEXT in Montana and currently in Florida. And that's been opened up to civilians. So far in Florida, we've trained over 300 people in a variety, again, of robotics, CNC, industrial technology maintenance, in welding.
It's a world of opportunity. We're currently chatting with Dr. Robert Shaner from LIFT, a manufacturing and innovation institute sponsored by the Department of Defense. Is LIFT an acronym for something?
It is. It's Learning Innovations for Tomorrow and Leading Innovations for Tomorrow. And the Leading Innovations for Tomorrow is the large part of our business. It's materials development. And just a little bit more about what LIFT is by example and how we accelerate and commercialize technology. If you were to visit our lab in Detroit, there's a Humvee on the floor. And Humvees were designed in the 1980s. They did not have anti-lock brakes. Someone came to a LIFT and had an idea to put anti-lock brake retrofit kits on a Humvee. LIFT was able to help prove out that theory, whether it could be done, connect that organization with the Michigan National Guard. It was proven that it could be done, and we were able to work with that organization to get that commercialized. But more importantly, there were 40 to 50 Marines and soldiers getting killed in Humvee rollovers. So not only were we able to accelerate that commercialization, but we were able to save lives.
Dr. Robert Shaner, I want to talk more with you about some of the work you're doing in addressing the skills gap, which we all know is prevalent in our society right now. But I need to take a short break to hear from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
We're back here on School Talks with Dr. Robert Shaner from LIFT, which is a Manufacturing Innovation Institute sponsored by the Department of Defense. Before the break, Doctor, we were talking about the number of ways that LIFT integrates itself really across the country and Puerto Rico and different places. And I'm curious, for our School Talks listeners, Dr. Shaner and I worked together for a time in Warren Consolidated Schools. And as we know well, it is home to, I think, 11 or 12 of the world's largest defense contractors. contractors. Mm-hmm. And does Lyft do any kind of work with those companies?
We do, and it's interesting, you know, as we talk about the defense industrial base, I think it's important to say that Michigan, particularly Southeast Michigan, is really the epicenter of the arsenal of democracy, and I think that's really the focus and intent of our Manufacturing Innovation Institutes, is to make sure we build that back up. But Lyft is not only a developer of materials, but we're a convener. So we are supported by the Department of Defense, but we also have a membership model where we have organizations that are members that can come to us. We can convene them with other partners, work on accelerating projects and identifying projects that can work on together. So we have well over 150 members at Lyft, and some of them are large prime contractors. Like Raytheon. Some of them are small to medium-sized businesses that might be making components for Virginia-class submarines that we don't even know exist here in Southeast Michigan.
You know, when I think about you do work in Puerto Rico, Florida, and Michigan, it seems that there are some regional differences in what each of those areas needs. And I'm curious how at Lyft you establish metrics for what is needed, say, in Puerto Rico versus what's needed here. And more importantly, how do those metrics connect to the available resources in each of the locations?
Yeah, first of all, the available resources in terms of workforce are there's a significant need. I think in the next 10 years, there'll be like 2.1 million advanced manufacturing jobs. They'll go unfilled if we don't do something. And you can imagine if we ever needed to spin up our defense industrial base, how that would impact us if we weren't able to do that.
I'm curious, given the regions that you're working in, how are each of those regions' needs different, and how do you establish metrics for them in terms of what you're doing in Puerto Rico versus here?
So in a multitude of ways. Again, one of the things the Department of Defense has asked us to do is convene small to medium-sized business, large prime contractors, economic development. So quite often we'll do things where we get people together and convene and talk about what those needs are. I think equally as important, through our membership model, one of our key members is Kearney Management Consulting, along with others like Siemens and other large organizations. But we're able to work with Kearney and be able to and get those metrics about regions and about what they need. For example, in Florida, we were able to use some of their data to determine what areas in Florida, what regions in Florida needed help with their workforce in terms of advanced manufacturing. Now, when we look at places like Puerto Rico, we're able to identify some of the nuances in terms of how Puerto Rico is very focused on the medical device industry, has a long legacy, good and bad, with the U.S. military, and how we are able to use Puerto Rico as a strategic outpost for the United States.
And I understand, separate from Puerto Rico and Florida, you led a pretty impressive initiative in Iowa.
We did.
And one thing, in doing some research for this interview, I'm really interested in knowing how you fostered this collaboration between all the players, the schools, the community, and so on. Tell us a bit about the Iowa effort.
The Department of Defense asked us to help modernize the workforce at the Iowa Army Ammunition Depot in Burlington, Iowa, which is in southeast Iowa. It's extremely rural. They've lost a lot of their manufacturing. There's essentially three things that happen in Burlington, Iowa: an ethanol plant, a fertilizer plant, and the depot. The depot hasn't been modernized in a number of years. As we were asked to go in there, we partnered with two other manufacturing innovation institutes, ARM out of Pittsburgh, which does robotics, and MXD out of Chicago, which does additive manufacturing. And we were able to convene in Burlington, Iowa, meet with those economic development folks, the local community college, literally getting on the road and driving to the local school districts and meeting them, and of course working with the GOCO that runs the government owned contractor operator that runs the depot, and bring people together and determine really what they need. Right. It's not a lot of different than running a school district in terms of dealing with multiple labor units, multiple unions, the local culture. So you really have to spend time building relationships, listening, and try not to talk too much and seeing what people need. And, you know, the the military and the ammunition industry has its own culture, and you have to be sensitive to that. So we took all of that into consideration, and I'm really, really proud that we were able to not only get our Ignite Advanced Manufacturing Foundational Program into the local schools as a hub at the local community college, but we were also able to upskill the ammunition manufacturer's workforce so they're ready for automation when it happens.
And when I think about Iowa, the three things you named, two of the three involve corn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ethanol and fertilizer,
yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
And then you have this munitions. One question, Lyft Learning Lab.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you have a learning lab. And as we talked before the break, how does that lab help address the obvious sort of manufacturing skills gap that you mentioned with regard to the next few years?
Yeah, I see it as a hub, and I think it's really critical. Not only, I know, you know, people want metrics all the time, like how do we know if you had 5,000 kids visit the learning lab, how many of them in 10 years are going to be engineers or welders? And there's really no way of telling that. Because of the way we do educational records. But it's critically important that we get kids exposure in a real way, right? It's nice to go on a factory tour someplace and see vehicles roll down a line. It's even better to have kids come someplace, put their hands on things. For instance, when you come to Lyft, you can work on a young person might work on a robot, and then they can go down and take a tour of the shop floor and see a larger version of that robot doing some type of research and engineering project on the shop mm-hmm. floor. That learning lab is also a base for doing things like outreach. We have a strong partnership with Michigan Technological University. We just had the Unbox Challenge there with a couple of local school districts last week, and that was partnership with Blue Forge Alliance in the Maritime Industrial Base and part of the Michigan Marine Initiative. So I think it's critically important, and it's a unique situation. I think it's also a unique situation for educators, right? I think the last time that I was in an advanced manufacturing facility was when I was superintendent, when I went into the Volt plant. And what I learned about automotive manufacturing at the time, that there was a lot of high lows and a lot of robots and not a lot of people anymore. When I walked into Lyft, when I visited Lyft, what I saw was pretty amazing what was going on in terms of research and development, in terms of making novel materials like alloys, but also things that are being done like welding on like materials like maybe aluminum and titanium or something like that. So I think that hands-on exposure, not only for students but educators, is really important, because I know several times they had every superintendent in Oakland County down for a visit. They had a meeting there, and several of them came up to me, my former colleagues, and said, I've never seen anything like this. And that's important, right? Because we got to see the art of the possible so mm-hmm. what we know we can dream for kids.
And it's only 15, 20 minutes away.
Sure.
That's
sure.
the amazing part.
Yeah.
Dr. Robert Shaner, the Chief Workforce Development Officer for Lyft. This pun is intended. There's no doubt the work you're doing is lifting up the future, especially given the importance of it, not only from national security, but really closing that skills gap that we talked about. Thanks so much for joining us on School Talks, and keep up the great work.
Thank you.
After a word from our sponsors, we'll chat with Dr. Alina Zachary Ross from Ypsilanti Schools, diving into the world of artificial intelligence. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Dr. Alina Zachary Ross, the superintendent of Ypsilanti Community Schools. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Great to be here. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
And we thank you for your time. In preparation for our interview today, I did some research on Ypsilanti Schools, and I've found that you've really positioned yourself as a leader with technology and really the role that artificial intelligence has begun to, how it's begun to affect schools. And I'd love to hear how you envision AI, as we call it, sort of shaping teaching and learning in your district over the next few years.
Well, you know, I really see artificial intelligence really becoming an integrated part of our curriculum, not set aside. Right now, people see AI as a set aside and not integrated. I see it a part of the core curriculum, just a part of really students taking it a part of their own learning. As a matter of fact, MASSP, the Michigan Association of Secondary Schools Principals, is having a Catalyst Conference next month where students are going to be having a part of it, being a part of choice, voice, and agency. Right now, teachers are leading the way. In the future, I see students really embracing it as their own. Right now, teachers are really learning about how to integrate it in their lesson plans. In the future, I see students saying, how might I use this, not thinking about just this ethical parts of, am I using it for cheating, but how might I integrate this in my own learning, student-directedness?
So much more of an enhancement to what they're already doing as opposed to a replacement, so to speak. So do you, as a district, are you supporting any particular AI tools or platforms, or are you sort of still in the experimental phase?
Yes. You know, as a district, I see teachers using it in several ways. For example, Chatbox. Yes, teachers are using ChatGPT, but in terms of chat boxes, they are using Perplexity and Claude GPT. But I also see it in lesson design and content. So we have BenQ boards in all of our buildings, so they're using it for CuriePod and Diffit. I also see Magic School AI in terms of lesson design so that they can include lessons so they can differentiate instruction. They're using Khan Amigo and in terms of we're a Google platform, and so they're using Notebook LM so that they can, that's where they have a safe place so that they can use personalized lessons and not worry about it going in the web and it use and the students' personalized information being all over the place and it's FERPA and HIPAA protected. And then what's new with this generative AI, they're using Canva and beautiful AI and Gamma so they can design pictures and other generative platforms so they can design things and make it things that they've never seen before. So they might say, I want a dinosaur flying and artificial, some kind of unique, innovative things and create something that they've never seen before and be creative and innovative. So it is so unique now with this visual and design tools. So it's really interesting how they're using it in so many ways, from those chat bots to lesson design and content to those visual and design tools. It's quite interesting.
The way you listed all the different tools at your disposal really shines a light on the fact that this is an ever-increasing and expanding area of technology. And because of that, I'm curious, have you been able to anticipate how AI and its use among students is done equitably and in a way that all students can have access to them? Any thoughts on that?
You know, yes, and we've had to really bring teams around this because we have to have representation and engagement and expression. So we really brought in that universal design for learning, that old UDL, but we've had to do that so that we've had those diverse experiences, thinking about the diverse backgrounds and the strengths. And so that's one thing that AI has been able to do. It does it well. And so We've had to be thoughtful about that, and we lean into AI for that, and be thoughtful about bringing in our teams about how might we encourage that. And so we've brought in tools like that ChatGPT, like GPT, but it's some of the things that are simple, like read and write for Google, and saying, hey, if we use speech to text, that's something pretty simple, but word recognition and voice recognition and some of those universal design, those can support, as we've seen dyslexia legislation happening, it enhances writing skills. It enhances accessibility. They're not, some of these AI tools aren't rocket science, but they support all students. They help us differentiate. Some of our multilingual students, language students, they really are really benefiting in our gen ed classes because it gives them access. And so we're really excited about what these tools like OrbitNote have been able to help us to do with annotation tools that are AI, but they reduce the barriers for our scholars. And they're just, voice activation. And so some of the AI tools aren't like, they're not these things that are out of this world, but they just provide access to our scholars.
Dr. Ross, if you'll stay with me, I need to take a short break to hear from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
We're currently chatting with Dr. Alina Zachary Ross, Superintendent of Ypsilanti Schools. So, Doctor, away from academics for a moment, how might AI support other parts of a school system, maybe like transportation or food service or counseling? Any thoughts on that?
I'm glad you asked about specifically the counseling, because we do use AI in a way that have expanded, because we know there's been a shortage in the area of like social work counseling, yet there's a high need, especially after the pandemic, where it has become an area that we've talked about since, we've done the MiFi assessments, and we've been really saying, please ask for help. And so in our district, we partner with a group called Teamology, where they use characters from Mr. Rogers, which is a household name that we knew about.
Sure.
And so this is a daily assessment. It's a quick assessment that you take every morning. And there are these characters that they've created. And it's called Teen Talk. And it's the children, the scholars, they choose their character. And it's based off aligned with the CASEL framework. And the scholars do this. It's a well-being check-in. And so before, you stand at the door every day, you try to see how your scholars are doing, but you didn't know. But this allows our educators and our teams to know how our scholars are feeling on a day-to-day basis. The children, the scholars, they check in with their Teen Talk character. And behind the scenes, though, usually you have these things and we don't know how they're doing. And it's AI facilitated, but there are actually people from Teen Talk that check, that are there as well. So it's live plus AI. And if there's an alert, the people behind the scenes contact the school, and there's people who you have designated either typically your social worker or the principal or someone, and they'll tell you, hey, you need to check in with this scholar. So there's screening, there's benchmark, there's customized alert, and there's also curriculum that their lessons. And it has really helped us. The discipline in the building has gone down. Our alerts that we have used to receive either from before we had securely, now we have LineWise, has gone down. And so we're really excited. The kids love these characters that they have. And so we really have just, we've enjoyed it. The scholars have enjoyed it. And we just have found it. It has paired well with our social workers. And so, you know, we just found that it's been a good partnership. It's better than the scholars going to find something off the internet.
Sure.
So this has helped us.
Yes. You know, among all the negativity with technology, especially AI and social media, it's nice to hear a story like yours where you're actually using it almost as an intervention to help children. That's to be commendable. Any recent or upcoming district initiatives that you'd like to highlight with Ypsilanti Schools as far as either workforce development and maybe preparing students for an AI-driven economy?
Yeah, you know, I think people will be surprised at how much AI is integrated. So, in preparation for this, I talked to some people at our high school. So I just have like four things to share. First, I was talking to our manufacturing scholars, and they had just walked, Baruti Kafele, Principal Kafele, had just been in our district last week, and he was there with our manufacturing scholars, and they showed him the virtual welding, one of the welding machines. And it's a virtual welding, and they showed him that they do outlines, the virtual welding first before they actually do the welding. And that whole virtual piece is all done with AI. And that's all already done through the manufacturing programming. Then our podcasting scholars, you know, they are our podcasting studio. We have a podcasting studio, and they do the outline of their scripts. They do all the editing with AI, and they do their voiceovers all already with artificial intelligence. Then we have a cosmetology program. And they get their licensing and already, and they do AI generated hairstyles. So before you decide on your hairstyle, they do their hairstyle. And then our scholars, they compete nationally for NASA. Like they compete and they compete so that they can do food for the astronauts. Like every year they compete at the highest level nationally, and they do their color schemes, they do their plating ideas so that they can make sure they are at that level, and culinary arts. And this all is done in advance with AI. And then lastly, we just started this year the drone aviation program, and all their flight routes are done with AI.
Wow. And, you know, what's interesting, you mentioned the cosmetology example. I've seen a lot of ways AI will show you how to maybe renovate your bathroom or a room in your house. And now we're using it for hairstyles. What a really positive use of it. One last question, if I could. Looking ahead, are you partnering or collaborating with any local universities or tech companies to try to foster this kind of educational innovation?
We are. You know, we work closely with Toyota Driving Possibilities. They are a partner that we have been working with the last 2 years to think about many of the things that I just mentioned to you about our jobs and workforce development. We work with the University of Michigan specifically with our curriculum, a thing called Calabrify Roadmaps. They have worked with us to put our English language arts curriculum into that roadmaps platform, so our scholars can put it on that roadmap. They can map out their work. They can talk into the roadmaps platform. Our teachers can level up map out their English language arts curriculum. The teachers can work with our scholars on there. We also work with Digital Promise and Hewlett-Packard and our HP AI Spotlight Lab, and that's with HP, Microsoft, and Intel. So that as we're talking about this AI literacy, that is not just the teachers, it's the teachers working with Digital Promise, and they are integrating that at the high school artificial intelligence so that it does talk about AI literacy along with our social studies, our math, and all of that, all of our core content, and mm-hmm. so that there's someone who can help the teachers, because right now our teachers were taught at traditional university level, and they're helping them to ensure that we know how to integrate. We just weren't mm-hmm. taught how to do this at the university level, and they're supporting us. And so we're not doing this alone. We didn't know how to do it, and so we are working in collaboration and with Michigan Virtual. That has been mm-hmm. one of our partners because we understand that we talk about that in Ypsilanti Community Schools. We are stronger together.
Dr. Alina Zachary Ross, to say you're at the forefront of this is an understatement. And I want to thank you so much for joining us on School Talks today. And as always, keep up the good work. That'll do it for today's program. From the work being done at the federal level with the military, all the way to the classrooms in Ypsilanti doing artificial intelligence, we cover it all here on School Talks. That's all the time we have. I do want to thank our guests, Dr. Robert Chaner and Dr. Alina Zachary Ross, for their time and expertise in their respective fields. That's all the time we have for now. But remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.